In the sermon I spent all day writing on Friday and scrapped yesterday, I was going to ask you to cultivate curiosity. But it seemed a little premature. Sometime in the near future, I will still ask you to be curious. I think I will always ask you to do that. Ask that of you and ask that of myself, because I understand it to be one of the core qualities of spiritual maturity and spiritual health. But not today. Not mostly. Some of us, it is already the exact right time to be asking for cultivation of curiosity, to try to understand how it is our nation has gotten here to this time and this place. And I appreciated what Carol said as she lit her candle, to understand this as a symptom of something larger. For others, we must draw a circle that allows for grief to move through us so that it does not get trapped in the corners and crevices of our souls, becoming rancid and undermining our future engagement of the world. And for others, we must draw a circle of safety around, assuring that those who have been explicitly targeted know that they are not alone. You are not alone in your survival. Protecting themselves and their loved ones, protecting yourselves and your loved ones, your bodies, your minds, your hearts. Towards this end, as a way to name our experiences and our feelings, to acknowledge them, as well as to help with that process of moving them through our hearts and bodies, there is an activity in the lobby, which I think is going to be a rather busy place today after the service. There are two large sheets of paper on either side of the walls of the hallway that leads to the classrooms. And if you don't know where that is, I know we have visitors in the room, it's going to be really obvious, or you can ask somebody. One of the sheets of paper says wall of grieving, and the other one says wall of gratitude. And there are colorful post-it notes all around, and I meant to put writing utensils out, but somebody I know will do that. Please write, and write what your heart asks of you. And if it's grief, I just encourage you to find something of gratitude for your own balance, not the world's, for your own. Write it there, PG, your gratitude, your grief. Let it be a witness to us as a gathered people. The second of our faith's name and namesake, universalism, comes from a heretical form of Christianity that proclaimed there was no hell and that God is love and only love. Back in its heyday, which is the 19th century, there were universalists who said that all would go to heaven, though some, due to their sins, would be slower to get there. But in the end, that is where everyone is. This was revolutionary, as I said, heretical. But there were the ultra-universalists who said that upon death, every single one of us, no matter what we had done in life, immediately encountered glory. Their rallying cry was, death and glory, one and the same. Today, I am wearing, I don't know if you can read it, love the hell out of this world. I am not wearing the white pantsuit I ordered online on Tuesday morning. Tuesday morning, when I was sure of the outcome of the election. A pantsuit that I thought I would be wearing as an homage, a tribute not necessarily to the actual person who was going to be our first woman president, but to the idea of a first woman president and to the throng, long line of suffragists who had brought that moment to be and had sacrificed. I am not wearing that pantsuit. I am wearing this t-shirt, this universalist t-shirt that says, love the hell out of this world. This hell that we Unitarian Universalists don't believe in, not the otherworldly kind, but we do believe in the one we make for each other. I am wearing this t-shirt because I think we are called to do just that, and we always have been, but now more than ever. Love the hell out of this world. There will be time to be curious. I'm curious now, and not just in that condescending way that we UUs sometimes can be. Thank you for laughing and recognizing ourselves here. It's important. I am curious because my heart aches and I'm not sure how we got here. And I actually feel really clear how we got here. And this is where I want to acknowledge that there are people of color in the room, but I'm going to talk to my white beloveds here. We did this. White people, we did this. And we have to clean up. I don't actually believe that God or the nature of the universe is capital L love. This is heretical to say as a Unitarian Universalist minister in the 21st century. I can't quite get to that Buddhist point of view that the nature of the universe is emptiness or neutral either, so I'm not going there. But I've never fully been able to get on board the love bandwagon. And so this means that I am ambivalent about the inspiring refrain, love wins. Perhaps you've heard the other version. Love wins in the end. If love hasn't won, it's not the end. There are times when my heart loves that and is soothed by that salve. And there are other times when I'm like, uh-uh. It's a clever saying, but I don't always believe it. I want to, but in my despair, it's hard to hear. And I have to own up that in my life, I have been called Eeyore. It is much easier for me to see doom than not. I have seen the exact opposite of love wins happen. But as a minister, I've kind of keep that on the down low because I'm supposed to drum up hope, right? Bring that to you, bring the good news of that. But this week, it's harder than ever to accept. I saw it best expressed in a photo. In the photo, there was a woman of color dejectedly holding a poster that simply said, hate won. So for years, possibly my whole life, perhaps it's a temperamental issue, I have been longing to be on the love bandwagon 100%, but mostly I find myself chasing it or watching it go by. And then something happened yesterday. Something important, a recognition. I do believe in love. It's just that I don't believe there's a guarantee that love always wins. You have likely heard the phrase made famous by Dr. King of the moral arc of the universe. What does the moral arc of the universe do? Bends towards justice. Some of you probably know that the origin of that phrase is not actually with Dr. King, but with our own Unitarian ancestor, the 19th century abolitionist and minister, Theodore Parker. So I do not believe that love will win on its own. I do not believe that the moral arc of the universe intrinsically bends towards justice. This is where my humanism comes in. Love wins or doesn't. The moral arc bends or doesn't because of human co-creation working with other forces. You can call them divine, you can call them natural, you can call them cosmic, you can call them history, because we make it thus. I don't actually know if love is going to win, and one day at a time, I don't need to care. I don't need to care because I am going to choose love whether it wins or not. I am going to choose love because without choosing it, I lose my humanity. I am going to choose love, love of my fellow humans, love of protection of those most marginalized, love of this planet, because such acts of integrity not only save my soul, they just might, particularly when done in collectivity, save the future. This is why you were greeted this morning with neighborhood love notes. And again, my thanks to Kathy and Aaliyah and Carol for doing that. And my guests, right? We're going to see more out there, those kids bubbling around. That is love. More urgently, that is why you were given chalk to take home or work or your favorite park, or a local school, together if you need some courage to do it, because it is in the small acts of love adding up over and over that will save you, and maybe the world. If you didn't take chalk this morning because you're like, ooh, right, ooh. Some of us have sensory motor stuff, or we just don't like dirty hands. There is more out there in the lobby for you to take. Take it for yourself. Take it for your friends. When you do write those messages, please be young and modern and take photos of them and post them on Facebook. There's a Facebook page, Neighborhood Love Notes. You can search it. It's public. Send them to me. We'll make our own album representing the Unitarian Society. I want to see what you come up with. Use the list of phrases or come up with your own. And this is also why, also in the lobby, and this is why I'm saying it's going to be busy there, we have a bowl of safety pins, and I want to thank Marlene for going out and buying these. These are so you can show your love to the most marginalized and offer yourself up as part of a circle of protection. Charity, when she came up and lit a candle, referenced her own safety pin that she's wearing. This is an American adaptation of something that started in the UK after the Brexit vote. There, the wearing of the safety pin was a visible way to show safety for any immigrant who felt vulnerable in the midst of the rising xenophobic nationalism entwined with that vote. And for us here, the safety pin is a sign of safety to all vulnerable populations, queer, trans, genderqueer peoples, immigrants, people from other nations in this country with or without papers, Muslims, Jews, folks of all persecuted faiths, women in hostile environments, black and brown folks, bodies and souls who face violence from so many angles it makes my head hurt and my heart hurt, people expressing dissent in the face of rising fascism in our country. But this is the thing I ask you. Wearing a safety pin seems simple. But the person choosing to wear it, adult or child, must be prepared for more than social justice eye candy. It's not meant to be the next sexy thing that we do to feel good about ourselves. Though depending on how we do it, it might turn out that way. Wearing it is a responsibility. It is, according to Isabel de Bruya, a public pledge to be a walking, talking safe space for the marginalized. It requires that we do more than just wear it. It requires that we are willing to act. And if you do not know how to act, then willing to commit to learning how and to cultivating the courage to do so. What must one learn? How to sit next to someone who is being harassed, letting them know they are not alone and you will not leave them alone until you are sure they are safe. How to use a phone's camera to film a police encounter with a person of color, perhaps downloading the app from the ACLU that transmits the recording directly to them so that if the phone is confiscated or damaged, the recording is still available. How to awkwardly or fiercely interrupt those moments when someone is saying something racist or homophobic or anti-immigrant or ableist and everyone else is just letting it happen. If your child or youth wants to wear a safety pin, to be fair to the child who sees it and needs the help that would come with it, your child must learn how and commit to speaking up and seeking adult help when bullying goes on. It is my fervent hope that our children will be like Anna in the story, who welcomes Farah and invites her in, but this actually takes explicit growing up, parenting, religious education to give them the skills to do this, especially as fear grows in our nation. We want our children to be successful. We want ourselves to be successful. There is no shame in not knowing how to do these things. They take time to learn and practice, to get down and courage to attempt. I have to tell you, I have been doing these things and I just made a fool of myself yesterday. So willingness to make mistakes. For those of us with identities of privilege, which is most of us in the room, even if we also have marginalized identities as well, our lives are spent kept away from learning and practicing these very acts of solidarity, or even seeing the need. So if there is interest in a workshop to grow these capacities, I hope that we can offer it and that we would attend it and support each other. We are already seeing an upswing in hate crimes, not just far away, but here. We're seeing an upswing in violence against property and people that is fueled by the hateful rhetoric of our new president-elect, his vice presidential choice, and some of his followers. Wearing a safety pin is not for play, and it is not for show. In these times, it is for real. I want also to share, and I thank Karen Bishop for alerting me to this, that we see brave stands happening already. We see New York's mayor, who suggested that the database of undocumented immigrants in New York City will be deleted, scrubbed, rather than the Trump administration be given access to the names and identifying information of 850,000 New Yorkers. This is why on December 3rd at 7 p.m. here at Tufts, we will be showing the film Defying the Nazis, the Sharps wore not only to take pride in our history and have it feed who we are today, but we are doing it in relationship with interfaith partners. We are doing it as a fundraiser for Interfaith Rise, which works to settle refugees from all over the world here in central New Jersey, providing ongoing supports for their success in their new home. With this, we are staking our ground on the side of love. In these new American times that are promising more, not less hate, we are proclaiming which side we are on. We cannot know which side will win, but we do know which side we will be choosing. And I ask another thing. I'm asking so much. I want to encourage you to learn to tolerate discomfort. Not to let it be your own internal discomfort in order to cross invisible, awkward social boundaries and let people who come from those groups that have been targeted, Muslims, Jews, Black people, immigrants, women, queer, trans, queer and trans and genderqueer folks, people who express dissent, people with disabilities, and to say explicitly, you have their back. Do this in your neighborhood. Do this at work. You may well get strange responses or one that tells you not to worry, things are going to be okay. Do not let that stop you. In my experience, each time I do this, my heart swells with a new boldness and it makes me more courageous for the next time. When I had envisioned what I would preach this Sunday several days ago, and actually what I wrote on Friday, I imagined using the metaphor of the Japanese art form of kintsugi, where cracked pieces of pottery are made new and made more beautiful by being filled with golden resin. I was going to suggest that we could be the golden resin required of these times in the worsening cracks in our common public life. And so you see the title of the sermon, your order of service, and it doesn't quite fit. But I think there's enough room to keep this metaphor from that discarded sermon. And so the new title is Loving the Hell Out of the Cracks in This World. I have named small acts of love that we can do, small acts filling the cracked places with something valuable and worthy. And I ask you to find your gifts so that you might do them, because I think more of this will be asked of us. More love, more courage. Our practicing these small and ever-increasing size acts of love will make it more possible when that moral arc of the universe bending towards justice needs us to pull it down. That love might win out in the end. There is no way to know whether love will win out in the end. But I do know I have picked love's side, win or lose. So in closing, I want to echo from this morning's reading, none of us alone can save the world. Together, that is another possibility waiting. Amen. Breathe. Blessed be.